This is The Science Show, and at this stage, I'd really like to play Helen Reddy. I am woman. Even the words suit. This is The Science Show on Radio National.
I am strong.
Yes, she is woman. Her name is Star Vartan, and she's a paradox. She sounds American, but she is from Australia, and is called Star, which seems to be a trifle flamboyant, but turns out to be the old-fashioned spelling with two R's and an E. And her book is called The Stronger Sex. That's woman. How come?
In certain respects, that's absolutely true. There's a whole bunch of categories that female bodies have exhibited tons of strength, both scientifically and in practical terms in the real world.
Give me an example.
Well, if you look at muscular endurance, that's something that you can look at both in the lab and you see in the real world as well. In the lab, there is a wonderful researcher called Sandra Hunter who did some tests about 20 years ago. She began this pioneering work where she looked at how long someone could induce a muscular contraction. And she had male and female college students, and she had brawny, big guys and nerdy guys and women and all of the people you might find on a college campus. And they lifted about 50% of the max possible weight that that person could lift. And she found that men sort of tapped out after about 10 minutes of weightlifting, and the female subjects in general could go half hour, 45 minutes, even one of them went to an hour. So that pointed her research to understanding how there's a tremendous amount of muscular endurance capacity in women's bodies, not lifting that max weight a few times, but lifting lower weights for a much longer period of time. And that is probably why there's such wonderful endurance runners and endurance athletes that are women who are showing up and beating men, even though they have less support, less training, and less experience. In the real world, we actually see perfect examples of this, because if you look around the world, you see women doing that repetitive weight work, like carrying water, gathering firewood, tanning hides, all those things that just require endurance strength. And I think that is a really good example of a type of strength that's really been overlooked.
What about the fairly famous one of enduring pain?
Pain is a very tricky subject. I almost didn't want to cover it in the book at all because pain is subjective. So anybody who researches pain is going to be dealing with not just the physical aspect of what they're dealing with in front of them, whoever the person is, but that person's entire history of what they've been taught about what pain means and how they should be treated and what they should expect from it. So it's a little complicated. Women experience more pain over different parts of their lives. So there's reproductive pain with your menstrual cycle. If you have a child and you go through pregnancy and childbirth, that's obviously a big one. And that process of experiencing pain starts young and you get a lot of practice at it. And what scientists have found is that among all human beings, male, female, any gender, the people that have the most practice with pain are the best at dealing with it. So in general, women have more practice at dealing with their pain. So that's why we probably see that women are more pain tolerant. But whether men or women actually experience pain differently isn't really yet known. There's some really interesting neurobiology. There's ways to try to bypass some of that cultural conditioning we've heard. So if you're a little boy and you've heard you should suck it up and not complain about your pain, versus you're a little girl and you're told that you can express your pain, all of that influences how one experiences pain and communicates it to the world and communicates it to a researcher. So is there a way to bypass some of this? Yes, by looking at the brain. And some of those tests have shown that probably it's a little bit closer than we think in terms of male and female bodies probably experience pain similarly. Because if you think about it evolutionarily, any human body is going to experience pain. They need to be able to handle it and move on or rest if necessary.
Star, how do you know all this? Did you study it particularly as an academic exercise? I know your grandmother was involved somehow.
No, I'm not an academic. I am a science journalist. And so this book really came out of my experience growing up in New York's Hudson Valley. I lived on a property with my grandma. It was just she and me, and we were back in the woods running a huge garden, building stone walls. She chopped the wood, I stacked it. And I really had this incredible experience while I was growing up of testing my own strength and not having a lot of people around telling me what I could or couldn't do or should or shouldn't do. And my grandmother just was old school. She made a list and said, these are your chores for the day. And then I had to go figure out how to deal with them. So, you know, being a kid, of course, I wanted to get my chores over quickly so I could go play in the woods and read books. And so I would pile the wheelbarrow extra full of those logs that I had to pile. And sometimes it was too full and I couldn't quite manage the wheelbarrow and it fell over. And that's how I learned my own strength as a child, by direct experience. It wasn't somebody saying, oh, this is how you should do a thing, or this is how you should move a rock. And so that really carried through my whole life. As I became a science journalist, I realized that I had heard a lot of things about my own body and my own experience in my own body of trying different sports and running and climbing trees was not what I had been told by other people. So there was this contradiction between what I'd been told and what I experienced in my own body and knew from testing my own strength since I was a kid.
So what's the big picture in this 2025, 2026 world? Because we're always warned, very much to do with human behavior and psychology and such like, that you need really big numbers to get some sort of clear idea of what is the case, because there's such a range of behavior, such a range of ability in the human population. What's your essential message on what we need to look at when it comes to the stronger sex, so-called?
That's a really important point. It's definitely something I wrote about a lot. So we talk about male and female bodies, and there's a tremendous overlap. We all know women who do have tremendous upper body strength. Generally, men tend to have more, but there's the human diversity among populations is huge. And that's a really important thing to keep in mind, because when you get to the highest levels of athletics, or even when you're in science and you're testing groups of people, keeping that in mind is very important. And we also have lots of gender diverse people as well. There's intersex people, many of whom are intersex and don't know it. That's not something that we test for in advance. There's people who are trans who are really at the forefront of challenging some of the ideas that we have, not just in gender expression, but in the science of it, because we can learn amazing things from what hormones are doing to their bodies. And how we understand that on a population level can really help all people and all human bodies, because these specific examples, we can then understand larger groups of people a little bit better. And so some of the most interesting advances that I've seen coming out of some of this new research, because a lot of this research is new, especially on the female bodies, as we all know, there's been wonderful books written about this. There's been a real dearth of research into female bodies medically. Exercise science, about 6% of all exercise science studies have ever been done on female bodies. There's just a tremendous amount more to learn. And also then with bodies that are outside of that gender binary as well. That's all great information for scientists.
How much are you concerned about the politics of this? Because we've seen, you mentioned trans just now, immense negative reactions from some quarters about such things. And here you are with your new book, The Stronger Sex, a challenge in the title straight away. Are you in any way foreboding about the launch of the book and what happens next?
I was a little bit concerned. I definitely think that this is the kind of material that could be used by some people to advance certain agendas. I'm old enough to have experienced that politics is temporary and people really get very excited about certain subjects. And then we move on and 10 years later, it seems like not a big deal. And I do think that's what's, maybe I'm too hopeful. I do think that's what's going to happen here. I had several people who are trans read the book and contribute their ideas and thoughts in terms of how to make the ideas in it inclusive, because I don't think that studying female bodies, which is incredibly important, should be fodder or ammunition to not study other bodies. I think what we need to do is take all of the information that we've lost or missed so far in not studying female bodies and expand that idea to say, let's make sure we do study all of the bodies. You know, that includes disabled people and all kinds of other ways of being human, which are traditionally not thought of when we're doing science. And I think there's a lot of scientists that are aware of that as well, because they see the potential of what they could learn from these, say, non-traditional bodies.
Yes, one of the most staggering examples, as I've mentioned on the Science Show many times, Helen McConnell in Melbourne, just about 30 years ago, it was the first published evidence, although some had been, in fact, covered up, well, many decades, even centuries ago, that is the clitoris and its size and its function. And she, being a pioneer of urology, published the results something like 27 years ago. And that's so recent and changed attitudes dramatically. But going back to what you were saying just before about some of the history, is there any information in anthropology of various people around the world over the different years where the male-female roles were somewhat different and rather along the lines of the stronger sex that you depict in your book?
Yeah, I think some of your listeners might know about the fact that they have reassessed many of the graves of Iron Age, Bronze Age warriors that were just assumed to be male because they had all these wonderful hunting and war implements in their graves. And then they did DNA tests when that became more common and available and found that some of these bodies were female bodies. And this has been repeated in a whole bunch of different categories. A lot of things that were assumed based on the contents of a grave or based on the situation that a body was found in, the sex of the individual was assumed. And now there's a lot of revision and thinking about that. One of the most interesting that has come out recently, and I spoke with the researcher who wrote this in Seattle a couple months ago, Carol Wall Scheffler, worked on showing how actually about 50% of all hunters have been and continue to be women. So women are out there doing that, what we think of as quintessential male body work of hunting down animals. And the idea that there were women sitting around a fire with babies and the men were out hunting all the time is just not accurate if you look at the broad swath of humanity. Are there cultures where that might have happened? Sure. But for the most part, the best people for the job would be doing the job, whatever that job is. If that's gathering plant medicines, if that's tracking animals, if that's hunting and killing animals, we didn't have enough people to separate things out by something as arbitrary as gender. And the other thing worth remembering in that is that hunting an animal depends on the animal, depends on the skill that you need to do that work. So in some animal hunting, you need to run really far, you need to run really fast, and you need to be very accurate with a spear. Those are three different skills. Other animal hunting, you need to be quiet and stalk that animal. You maybe need to create some kind of way to capture the animal. So when you talk about something like hunting, oh, men always hunted. Well, hunted what and how? And how do we know that men hunted in the past? We don't. We actually made that assumption, and that this recent research has shown that for the most part, women are hunting too.
The book is The Stronger Sex by Star Vartan, who lives on the south coast of New South Wales, and her book is published next week. Very brave